Well, I can't match that, but my name is Scott Neal. I'm from Phoenix, Arizona. And why is it important? Why is religion important? There's a saying that I like that says, no army can stop a truth whose time has come. And why is truthfulness in religion important? Because lies in religion can lead people to be racist, bigoted, hateful, xenophobic, homophobic. Lies in religion can make those same people comfortable with those despicable traits. That's not good for society. It's not good for the individual. I'm not comfortable up here. I've never really liked Earth that much. I think it's kind of a second-rate planet. In Arizona, we have a saying, it's the Apache Junction of the planets. But you have to wonder, sometimes questions are the best thing to ask. This God, this one true God, that decides to not have the church on the earth from 100 AD roughly to 1830, doesn't seem like he cares about his children that much. Are we to believe in a God that has his church restored, his one true church, with living apostles and a prophet on the earth, and he can only get 0.4 of 1% of people in his church? He's either incompetent or lazy. I'm not sure which one. How could it be that a prophet of the church, called of God for 60 years, can only tell stories from when he was a young bishop of the age of 27? Can you tell me that in 60 years of being an apostle and a prophet, he hasn't met a single human being with an interesting story? The only stories he can tell was when he had 26 trillion widows in a single ward. It doesn't make any sense. But I really don't know. But what I do know, as you study religion, it doesn't take you long to realize that God did not invent religion. Men invented it. If you ever wonder, just look the way women have been treated for the last 4,000 years in religion. Either God hates women or men hate women, and I think it's men. And I'm not one of those men, thankfully. But truth's an interesting thing. The church reminds me at times of the leadership of the German situation in World War II, where Goebbels, when he was interviewed late in that war, said, you don't have to destroy the truth. You just have to hide it long enough to where it doesn't matter. So when the Book of Abraham comes out, they send it out in 1968. What do? They come up with the Correlation Committee. They make lessons so goddamn stupid that a gerbil couldn't keep his focus for 45 minutes. So, while I despise them, I'm amazed by their ability to deceive. Utterly amazed. Nobody's come out with me.
Jonathan Ross, out of Austin, Texas, just let myself know the truth about 2.5 months ago. I had a traumatic experience on my mission, and that's what led me out. I would have considered myself like the new Nephi right beforehand. I was as clean and as good as I could be. And I thought mission was going to be awesome. I was going to be leadership. Well, then came prison resume as soon as I got out. And boy, he corrected that real fast. Quite soon, he told me, pretty much insinuated I was a son of a devil or something. And he thought, his gentle demeanor towards anybody didn't step in tow right behind him. He didn't worship the ground he walked on, it seemed pretty much. That's started to send me down into depression pretty quickly, and especially after he heavily criticized me after one transfer where my mentally handicapped companion was the senior companion and didn't take the blame, and then he threw it all on me. So things started turning worse, and after a year, I eventually told him, I think I've got depression, and he's like, no, you don't. You're just not working hard enough. You're not doing good enough. Well, about 3-4 weeks later, suicidal thoughts were starting to get serious, and I was breaking down, and at that point, I told him, no, I need to go see somebody. So that led to a lot of doubts. On top of that, when I was also on my mission, which was here in Salt Lake City, I ran into an apologist to the church, and I was able to talk with him for about 4.5 months. Didn't really understand everything he was talking about. Got exposed to a lot of the problems of the church, not even knowing that they were problems. He had explanations. He had explanations for everything, and I trusted him because I was naive and trusting that the church was true. And well, that really loaded up my shelf really well for those next few years, especially with the conflict of how my mission president treated me was and how unhappy I'd been. And so it took me about 8 years for that shelf to just weighing on me. And one of the other things that hit me was I had a roommate in college, and he was right after my mission, so I was like, I want to get him converted to church, and he pretty much asked me this point blank question, is like, well, what would it take if you had not been born in the church to change your religion? And then I realized at that point that I probably would be atheist at that point, and there was nothing that would ever get me to believe the church. That I couldn't find anything that would just be solid evidence that would move me in that direction. And so I knew from that point on that I was kind of living a lie, and I kind of put it that big on my shelf. And then eventually, after through therapy, because my marriage was coming to a close end, to me living a lie this whole time, my therapist got me to be able to realize that I needed to allow myself to ask that one question that I've been putting on my shelf forever. What if the church isn't true? I finally allowed myself to answer that in minutes, and it was gone, and that was the hardest week and a half is. I realized I could lose my family, my wife, my son, and all my precious money that I've been earning due to divorce, and I was like, oh, I have to accept all this. And so I had to face that fact, and once I did, I allowed myself to start exploring and accepted the consequences one way or the other, and realized, well, that wouldn't be the end of the world. That'd just be a new beginning. It would suck, but I'm here to report that my wonderful wife was able to see it also and came out with me, and so we're both here today, and I'm really glad. Thank you.
I felt the need to get up here because my heart is beating out of my chest, so that must be the spirit, right? I might pee my pants up here, but that's not appropriate from the pulpit, right? I'm Janet. I'm from California, and I'm one of the terrified ones spoken of earlier. I'm here all alone, although I've met a friend already, and I'm currently dealing with the confusing dichotomy of the Mormon side of the brain that is still fighting against your new truth, and so coming to an ex-Mormon conference, I'm fighting all of my beliefs that have been instilled through my whole entire life of what ex-Mormon means. So I am hoping that that this can become kind of a personal journey for me, and that you will come and say hi to me and tell me your story. I am grateful to feel your joys and pains and hear that it does get better, because that is very encouraging. So when I was younger, I even had doubts, probably primary age. I remember when they're talking about Bible stories, I'm like, he really couldn't have lived in a whale. Come on. So I've been given the curse of the inquisitive mind, and I remember over the years just feeling physically ill of trying to reconcile my evil mind with trying to be more crafty and more of the typical Mormon woman that just didn't really fit me. So it's amazing, and I'm sure all of you know how long it takes to build up those shelves and how quickly they can come crashing down once, like I believe his name was John that just spoke, when you actually are open to that one question. And that's what has recently happened to me, and it has not been easy. So I am looking forward to drawing upon your strength, if you will. So thank you very much. I hope to meet and hear your stories.
Hi, my name is Emma Ziesel, and I live here in Utah. I'm originally from Australia, so my accent's a little different. So I started questioning about this time last year, and I officially stopped going to church on July 1st this year. So this is still really new for me, and I really wanted to come because I listened to all of the recorded talks that are online, and I'm so grateful that those were there. I wish you had from the very beginning, because for days I just had my earphones in and kind of ignored everything else and just listened. So that was awesome. But so I guess I think I almost stumbled across my lack of faith in my early 20s when I was like college age, because I remember really questioning like the whole black thing and being really concerned about that, and I guess I didn't really pursue it very much. But I had a book for one of my college classes called Guns, Germs, and Steel, which I'm sure lots of you have read. And there were only several chapters of that book that were assigned to read, and I was really interested in it because at the beginning, one of the first chapters, there was this map that showed like the migration of humanity after, you know, we evolved. And I was like, how does that work? And I always thought I'd go back someday and finish reading it, and then I graduated and I never went back and read it until late last year, when it was mentioned on one of the I'm an ex-Mormon videos, and I thought, oh yeah, I'm going to go read that book. It's on my bookshelf still. So I read it. But the thing that really prompted me, and I think that, you know, had I heard some information, well, I don't know. I think you have to be at the right time and the right place to be ready to hear, you know, this stuff. So I think for several years had just kind of questioned if there really was a God. I never really felt this, you know, this spirit, and I felt nice, but I never felt like I had answers to prayers ever. And my sister would always say, did you pray about it? I'm like, oh, that doesn't really help. I just kind of made the best decision I could. So, and then I think my triggers kind of really started several years ago when the Mormons documentary aired on PBS, and I was living in Australia at the time. And the thing that really bothered me was the stone. And I was like, he used a stone? That doesn't make any sense. And so then I like had to reason myself through this, you know, and I was like, okay, so Satan must have known there was a stone, so he encouraged other people to use stones, so then it would like make it look bad for Joseph. Anyway. So, and also bothered me that he wanted to run for president. That I just thought that was kind of lame. But, you know, you kind of think, and you guys probably all relate, that this is me. I'm just, you know, I don't have the faith, blah, blah, blah. And it kind of never really occurred to me that the church might not be true, because people that I love and respect and admire and are very intelligent, they know it's true. And so you just kind of, I just felt like it was me. But for the last couple of years, I guess I'd really started to really think, okay, I don't know if there's a God, and I can't bear my testimony. I was in Young Women's, I didn't feel like I could really bear my testimony, and so just kind of do the thankful testimony rather than this is what I believe. But so this time last year, I was reading a book, had nothing to do with my religion, with anything religious, called Influence, The Power of Persuasion or something, by Robert Cialdini, I think is his name. And I just came across a few things about like when you make a statement, you're more likely to believe that. And I was thinking, okay, well, testimonies and, you know, social pressure. And I think it was that kind of psychological understanding of why people believe that really tipped for me. And that's when I pulled that book off my shelf and read it. And I'd always believed in evolution up until the point of humans, because that was kind of like what my parents had taught me. And then I was like, evolution's awesome. I want to get a picture of the Tree of Life on my wall of like the evolution. I just think it's awesome. And so, I mean, science and understanding human psychology. And then I started studying about like Christianity history and like the Jewish religion and how that came around. And so that was really my trigger. And then, of course, I had to say, well, what about Joseph Smith and the Book of Mormon? What's up with that? And at first I wanted to stay away from Mormon think. I was a little cautious. I tried to just read church books. And then after, like, I kind of just would, like, look at Fair LDS. And after a while, I was like, forget it. Mormon think. It really, like, this stuff seems like it's accurate. And so, yeah, I began to trust her side. But that's basically my story. And my family's been, you know, they think that I'm just proud, I think, and misled. We're a loving family. They haven't cut me off or anything, but they all just feel kind of sorry for me. My husband is still a very committed member, and that obviously adds a huge struggle to any marriage, so that's a challenge. We only have one daughter from my previous marriage, and so I kind of got the say on that. She doesn't go to church, and she's very, very happy about that. She's 12, and church is totally boring to her, but she wants to make up her own mind, so I try not to push things, but we talk about science a lot, and I hear her kind of mock things now a little bit. I'm like, okay, she's on the right direction. So anyway, it's nice to meet you guys, and I hope I'll get to know lots of you over the weekend.
Hi, my name's Steve Holbrook. I live in Orem, Utah, and I've been out of the church for 25 years, and this happened before the web, and it was kind of a lonely experience, kind of wondering how am I going to raise 5 sons in the middle of Orem, but there was no other direction for me to go, because once I asked that question or gave an answer of, what if it's not true? That's the simplest answer to all of these issues. And it felt so wonderful, I went and took my garments off and was like a newborn man. I really was. I felt like I finally arrived. I'm 30 years old, and I'm finally here. And the thing that I'm most pleased about being here is just feeling life inside of me. It's just simple as that. I don't need a testimony of anything else. I have life inside of me, and I see life inside of you. And we as humans get a lot from each other and sharing socially. And as powerful as having information on the web is, having people on the web that you know, that share with you what's going on in their life, is even more powerful. We're all moved by each other. And just like in the gay movement, it's taken off who they are. And that's touched people's lives in their life. And these concentric circles ripple out. I think that that's more powerful. You, your stories, how you touch each other, will have more bearing on others in looking at the church and having questions than the data. I think the data is great. I couldn't stop reading when I first discovered it. And I had to get to the answer to the place where I got. But it really is about each other. I professionally work doing web standards. I get to see Tim Berners-Lee, the guy who invented the web, every 6 months. And it's changed our existence. And so has Facebook. That's the killer app for the web. And I just encourage all of you to, in the appropriate moments, to share with people authentically who you are. That will touch lives, and that will make a big difference. So, thank you. Glad to be here.
So I've got a little stopwatch myself, so start that now. Okay, so my name is Mark Cross, and I'm a provocateur and saboteur. I love to just kind of dogpile on silly things that people say on the ex-Mormons worldwide group. Some of you may know me. Some of you were supposedly coming, and I don't know if you're here or not, but I left the church in 1997 intellectually, and right here in Salt Lake City, just over there in Rose Park, kind of 600 North, I lived over there with my then wife. She was a Mormon. She still is. We're not married anymore. My son had just gotten born. This is May of 97. And a few months before, like all during my son's incubation period in her womb, as soon as I knew that I was going to have a son, that we were going to have a son, I started evaluating everything in my life, top to bottom. And this is all subconscious. And I started, saying, well, to be a good dad, I've got to throw this out of my life. I've got to do this better. I've got to start doing this. I've got to stop doing this. And by the end of that 9 months, he was born, and so was I. I left the Mormon church at that time. And the internet, the web, so there's a difference, internet and web, different things. Tim Berners-Lee did invent the web. And, the first thing I did when I got the web, and that was during this incubation period in 96, the first thing I did was look up porn on the internet and on the web. But then I quickly, got through that phase in about, 10 minutes. And the next thing I looked up... I had to rinse off and everything, But then the next thing... No, there was no rinsing that I recall. I don't remember. But anyway, then the next thing I looked up was church stuff, there was stuff that had accumulated in my mind on my shelf. I liken it to a wet Bounty paper towel that you keep dropping pebbles on, and eventually it breaks through. And that's what had been happening to me, and it was all very sudden. And I have so much to say. I'm watching my time here too. I've got 2 minutes and 13 seconds to sum up all that's happened since then. Was anybody here in knows people in exmormon.org? Is anybody? Okay, you, okay? Yeah, because I was, this is actually, 1996, 97, and you were a big contributor there, and probably still are, so I wanted to thank you publicly, and a round of applause there, so I wanted to thank you, actually, Richard, but there was a bunch, as you know, that was like the definitive source back then, the recovery from, I was, the bulletin boards and everything, I was really involved in that, and, posting, but initially, just reading the stories after stories, and people still have their personal stories up there, and just reading those stories on my little web TV that I had, it wasn't even a PC, I just, in the middle of the night, I was, researching stuff, but I wasn't looking up porn, really, except after that 10 minutes, but it was all that, and, somewhere in a landfill in Salt Lake City is my scriptures, my triple combination specifically. Now, and this, I'm not, that's actually something I regret. I specifically remember there was a psychic moment where my psyche was torn, and I realize I have 30 seconds here. I tore up my triple combination, and that was not a good moment for me. I don't say that. It was just so traumatic, and I threw it in the dumpster of that complex. I have 20 seconds. And I wish I had that. That was all so marked up. But anyway, I'm now out of time, and I wish I could talk for more time. But oh well. Okay. Thank you.
All right, I hope you can all hear me. My name is Tom Alsop. Please tell me a little bit more. There we go. So my story starts out about 2 years ago. Interestingly enough, I found myself at the pinnacle of my life. I'd realized at that point in time, this is November, 2 years ago, that most of everything that I'd ever wanted in life had come true. All of my accomplishments that I'd set out when I went on my mission. I wanted to come back and get married to the love of my life. I wanted to have a great family with lots of kids. I wanted to get my education. I wanted to get out and get a great career. And I wanted to be, a leader in the church. And 2 years ago, I felt that, hey, I'd finally arrived. The only problem was I didn't believe in the church anymore. And ironically enough, I got a phone call from our stake president on the very morning that I'd had this very interesting discovery that I really didn't believe, and I was doubting and not knowing what to do. And he came over, and interestingly enough, being inspired as he was, he decided to call me on the stake high council. And so I reached this point, this decision point in my life when I thought, okay, could I really stay with the church? Could I live with this? Knowing my wife, and I had probed her, right, on many occasions. Hey, horses in the Book of Mormon, what's all that about? And I would like hint about, hey, steel, I don't think they had steel back then, So I was trying to throw these hints out, and she'd go look and do a little research on it, because she was my research queen. And she said, no, there's nothing out there. Don't think about it. You're going the wrong way. So I'd reached a point in my life when I thought, okay, I could live with this. I convinced myself there was a lot of good in the church. The problem was, so I accepted the calling. I was on the stake high council for 6 or 7 months. Well, my son had just got back from his mission, and being a good Mormon that he was, found a wife in about 4 months and had a proposal date in another month after that. And it hit me as we were driving home one day. He turned to me. This is a son that did not talk to me very often. He said, Dad, I want you to know how much I love and appreciate all that you've done for all of us. And he said one very key thing. He said, thank you for breaking the cycle. He was referring to the molestation that happened to me when I was a child and that I had broke for all of my kids. But see, that had another impact, because I realized at that point in time that I had to break an even more significant cycle, because I didn't believe in the church and I knew the church wasn't true. And it wasn't about me anymore. It was about my family and about my kids. And gratefully for all of you, Richard, you were one of them. I went to RFM, and I finally made the decision to get the support that I needed to extract myself from the church, even though everything was perfect from where I thought I was. Just I had to be honest and open, and I had to save my kids. And I remember I got all the advice that I needed. Those of you who were there, I was stuck in Zion, and I had lots of help. Everyone reaching out telling me what to do. The advice was wonderful. You people were wonderful. Thank you so much. And my heart was beating. I realized that I finally had to tell my wife. thought at the moment that I would lose everything. I really believed I would lose everything. My heart was beating so hard. When I finally got the courage, this was 2 days going by, and I sat her down, I said, honey, and I didn't know how to say it. I said, I don't know how to tell you this. I'm just going to say it. I don't believe in the church anymore. And I'm going to let her take over.
So, my name's Heidi Alsop, and we're from Oregon. So he told me he didn't believe, and I was devastated. I cried for a week. You have to go see the bishop. The bishop can fix you. And before he even hardly got home from the bishop, the stake president wanted to see him. And I realized it wasn't going to be a quick fix. The bishop couldn't fix him. And he was really, he wouldn't go to church. He wouldn't do any of it. And we had 5 sons. The oldest just got home off his mission, like he said. Meeting the girl to marriage in 4 months, and this was 10 days before our son got married. Not in the temple, because his wife's family is not members, and I found out my daughter-in-law won't go to the temple until the church accepts gay marriage, so yay for that. And so I cried for a week. Within a week I accepted it, and I set out on a mission to save my husband, because I was very smart, and I could do the research, and I could fix him and bring him back. And I'm a crappy bringer backer. So 2 weeks later, I was out too. And and when he first told me, within that first week, he works for Intel, and we happened to have sabbatical, right as he had told me. So we had 8 weeks to be together. No work, no distractions, no nothing. We had camping trips and stuff planned, but no. He didn't have to go to work every day, so we could be together all day every day. And he told me, into that first bit of me actually trying to bring him back, he said, well, you can always come to the dark side. I said, no way, I'm a Jedi. And so we joked a lot about Star Wars and dark side and Jedis and stuff. And then the 2 weeks later when I went back to RFM to thank everyone, he told me about RFM, I went there and I became 2 Jedis. And a lot of people know our story. And this is Sith Lord. And Shit Lord, yeah. His mission companion had a typo and called him Shit Lord one time, and that stuck too. And so, yay, we're out. 3 of our 5 sons are out. 1 is still TBM, but very loving and accepting of us. The oldest son breaks my heart. In August, he wrote us a letter saying we're not the kind of people who should be around his children and to have a nice life. And his wife was due on Sunday with our first grandchild. And I heard through the grapevine that she was supposed to be induced today, and no word from her. So I guess I'll see pictures on Facebook. I guess I'd rather have a grandchild I'd never know than to have one ripped away from me in 5 years. That I built a relationship with, but maybe he'll come around. I don't know. But we were so happy and so in love and glad that we left together. And we're thankful, really thankful. I mean, people like Richard Packham, who found this out before the internet. I don't know how you found out stuff. Google.
One more comment here really fast. There is a very important trickle effect that happens when we leave the church. And, you know, we can number now probably in the dozens the number of people that we've helped to extract. And going on Facebook and going on to, you know, just reaching out to your friends, being a good example, really has a significant impact. So remember that trickle effect. Be an example. Reach out to people. Thanks.
My name's Amy, and for me, it's been about a year. Things kind of hit when my mom died out of nowhere. She just died in her sleep. She wasn't sick or anything, and it just was a huge surprised, and she used to joke about how she was going to live to be a very, very old lady because her patriarchal blessing says that she would live for as long as life was desired. So when she all of a sudden was gone, I thought, how's that possible? What's going on with this? But it's funny how when you look at things, there's other things that happen before, I think, to prepare you even more so that when you find out what is real, you're a little bit more ready to hear it. I was very, very strong member all my life. Went to BYU. I was going to be a seminary teacher. Finished that. Taught institute at Harvard. It's kind of funny. And it was just my life. And I married this great man who was just golden. And he's still a great guy. Ends up he was in a closet. And but I was going to make it work because if you're married in the temple, anything can happen, right? I thought, well, I got my degree in psychology and I can do this. And he loves me, he just loves men too, but nuts. Yeah. Anyways, I stayed for 4.5 years after finding out because I was that determined and eternal salvation and all that stuff. But little by little, things happened, and single parenting. I've got one daughter, and I recently talked to my brother. I'm the only one in the family that is, I don't even know what, technically, I guess I'm not ex-mo, but it's a process. He thinks I'm just doubting right now, and I said to him, he said, you know, you got to be careful. Satan is very influencing and all that. I'm like, oh, sure, okay. But where are you getting all of this stuff that you're reading? I'm like, Journal of Discourses. I have the app now. It's all in there. I said, well, okay, think about it. How would you react if President Monson were to go up to the pulpit next conference and talk about the moon people? I mean, really? If it were true, why would it be any different? Why would it be any different? But I didn't want. But I told him, like, I don't want to say more because he's very happily married and has all these kids and everything. Like, I don't want to. Oh, because I've seen that happen. But I don't know. Planting seeds. But things happen. And I feel like I'm still pretty raw, pretty new to it all, trying to accept it. Once you allow yourself to ask that question of what if it's not true, then, well, that's a doozy. And I just feel like I'm still, and it's been a year, I'm just reading more, more, and more. I guess there's a part of me that feels like maybe there's still something else out there that can show that everything that I was taught in my life actually was true. But then I read more and find out, wow, it's even worse than I thought. So then I read more and more, yeah. So yeah, that's where I am. And I'm very, very happy to be here in a place where there's others. I live in Provo. Oy. Oh my gosh. When I was in Boston, okay, we used to say, go to Utah instead of go to hell, jokingly. And I guess we said that too many times. So here I am. True story. So anyways, I'm very, very happy to be here and just to learn and get advice from all of you as I'm trying to figure out how to eventually come out of my own closet and tell my family what's really going on, probably after my grandma passed. She's 98, and I don't want to kill her, too, and she's still having problems with my mom passing, and it's a process. You have to pick timing, I guess, but anyways, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Hi, my name is Mike Norton. I go by, he's like, oh, thanks, Mom. Now, I go by a new name, Noah, on the internet there, and I'm just curious. I've always wanted to ask this in a room of ex-Mormons. Who got Nimrod in the temple? Come on, there's a Nimrod out there. Any Nimrods? Nimrod? Oh. Well, I wouldn't admit to it anyway, either, if I were you. So, Nimrod, this is to the Nimrods out there. I am not one of you. You know, the conference theme is past, present, and future. And so I just wanted to touch on all three of those real briefly here. Past, Richard, might I understand your birthday is September 23rd, Richard? September 1st. Okay, I thought you said September 23rd. September 23rd is a special day for me, but I wanted to give Richard Packham here some props, something that I have literally never told anybody. Richard knows, but Richard and I are lovers. And, no, I'm just kidding. Now, now... Seriously, though, I left the cult in 2002, and later that year, I put the word out on the internet that I need a blank temple recommend, and Richard is the one that got it for me, and I'm sharing this now because Richard gave me permission to share this. With that blank temple recommend, this is back in 2002 when they didn't really change the new recommends and because of somebody going in and the temple without permission. From 2002 until just a couple of months ago, I have helped 175 faithful, active Mormons go to the temple just to see the damn kid get married. And you know, that, you know, I and most of you probably know, I recorded the temple endowment ceremony and posted it online in like 2000 and whatever, I guess 2012 last year. But my most important thing I can do, honestly, is help these poor bastards that the only option they have is to pay to catch up on their tithing and pay thousands of dollars in tithing, or to get a temple recommend from, you know, some son of perdition. And I've had a few of them say to me point blank, as I'm handing them a temple recommend, you know, I just want you to know, you know, I still believe the church is true. And I say, and you know, I want you to know, I don't care. You want to see your daughter get married? Yes? Great. You're worthy. There you go. And... You know, the very first one I gave out actually was to a well-known politician in Utah that he and his wife wanted to go see their son get married in a temple out of state, and they couldn't. He told me the bishop wants us to catch up on tithing. He says, I know where the tithing money goes to. He says, I can't in good conscience give them this money. I said, how much do they want? He said, $22,000. If we pay 20, and I said, so just so I'm clear on this, you pay $22,000 and you're instantly worthy to see your son get married. And he says, yeah. And I said, can you not see how sick that is? And he says, you're preaching to the tabernacle choir, my friend. He says, trust me. He says, but it's neither here nor there. He didn't tell his wife. He convinced his wife. He talked to the bishop, worked out a deal. They went to the temple, and after they left the temple, he told his wife, I didn't get the recommends from the bishop. And she's like, where'd you get them? He says, you don't want to know. Now, his wife was actually a believer at the time, and they talked all the way home, and she said, but how is it possible the Lord would prevent us from... He said, no, it's not true. I've been telling you that for years. And so his wife is very much out to now. And I'm happy to say his son, who got married in the temple that day, left the church in 2007 with his wife as well. But that's, you know, that's the past, and I'm still working on that. Present, the new temple endowment ceremony, it's so special. It's, and there's been a teensy legal kink, emphasis on kink, in the plans to release the new temple endowment movie today. I may or may not be the subject of an attempted blackmail attempt, and there may or may not be a certain sex tape out there that that somebody's trying to expose. Richard is not in it. But it's... Anyways, it's being taken care of. Police have been contacted, but there's a teensy delay in that. And I'm not talking months or years. Legal issues need to be resolved before that's taken care of. But so that's present, and that's coming out very soon. But unfortunately not tonight because of a little legal problem. In the future, you can bet your sweet bippy I'm going to get a second anointing on video. It's not a question of if, it is a matter of when. They still go on in the temple in Salt Lake. I know exactly which room they happen in, and I have acquired a lot of very expensive electronic equipment and very, very, very small cameras to capture it. Obviously, I can't be in the room when it happens. I don't need to be in the room when it happens. And it will happen. If they continue to take place in the Salt Lake Temple, I will get one on video. And I hope it's Boyd Packer that's doing the ceremony. But... and I want to say, I don't suppose Rodrigo Tafoya is here from Orem, is he? Well, Rodrigo Tafoya told me he was going to kill me, cut my head off, and hold up to the cameras for like Nicholas Berg, so I was just going to give him a shout out if he was here, but apparently not. Because he's too chicken. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I want to thank just a few people. Kath Jones and Larry Greenwood and Adam Rogers and Denise Iyer. I'll be frank with you, I've been unemployed for 2.5 months. I'm poor as dirt, so if it wasn't for those people, I wouldn't be able to come here tonight, so I really appreciate their generosity to helping out. And frankly, I'm looking for a room to sleep in tonight, so if anybody has a spare tub I can crash in, that would be spectacular. So I'm going to go in the back and party with Heidi back there and her husband, and I look forward to chatting with you guys in the hospitality suite later. Have a good night.
We're going to end this about 9:45, so we'll do these that are up here, maybe about three more. It's probably about what it'll be.
My name is Al Heidman, and I'm a son of perdition. And I want to thank Steve, because I'm 25 years old as a son of perdition as well, so now I don't feel so alone. Especially thank Janet for giving me the courage to be here, because I'm also one of the people who knows not a soul in this room. And to be honest, this is the first time I've been in the same room with another son of perdition, daughter of perdition. I just haven't seen too many others like us. Back then, there wasn't an internet, there wasn't social networking, and I think for most of us back then, it all started inside with the right question. Mine happened on my mission. I served 74 to 76 in the Argentina South mission. For some reason, I think I was waiting for another companion. I was in the mission home, and the mission president suggested I go to the library and find a book and spend some time studying. They had a really well-stocked library, and I went to the mission library, and I found this book by Lucy Mack Smith, The Story of Joseph Smith. It was an early edition. So not only did she explain what she still does in the edition you'll get on Amazon, that she almost tells the exact word-for-word vision story, only it's her story years before, decades before. But she also had a wonderful section talking about Joseph and how proud she was of him as a boy because he could find treasure anywhere. And people would call him over and have him come find their lost rings and things, and she was very proud of this. Well, I've ordered the book from Amazon since, that lately, and guess what? That section of the book's not there anymore. But that's what started me thinking. That's what started me asking questions. I have to say that the good work of the Tanners, the early work, Godmakers was helpful. I came back. I went to BYU. I got involved with student government. I started producing the major concerts. And guess who started building a studio in town? They wanted somebody who knew how to work with Hollywood people. And all of a sudden, I began working for the Osmonds. I began as executive assistant to the producer. I became a floor manager. I became once that was for the last two seasons of their show, which we produced in Utah. Then we went on the road, and I became the road manager for 2 years. As the road manager, I had to go out and advance the tour, so I was sent out all around the world, all alone. Guess what? These Gentiles weren't so bad. In fact, they weren't evil, they weren't wrong, they weren't living wrongly. In fact, there were so many good people, and so many good people of these all these other religions. And so many good people had no religion. And it started me asking more questions. To make a long story short, a year or two down the line, they noticed a change in me. My wife noticed a change in me, and I also had 3 children. Alan and Merrill, who were heading up the family, George decided not to show up for that meeting, but Alan and Merrill and their personal manager, Carl Ingeman, I remember the day we sat down, had a little meeting. Basically, they gave me a choice of a red or a blue pill. And one pill, I had my career to continue, and it would be very flourishing. The other pill, it's time to go. And so the next day, I informed my family that I no longer had a job. Fortunately, someone who knew my work in Los Angeles offered to hire me, and my whole family moved to Los Angeles. My wife thought I was incredibly crazy, and to make a long story short, her family swooped down, picked her up and the kids, and took them out of the household of a son of perdition. I finally got to the point where I felt I needed to resign from the church. Actually, I hired an attorney. Back then, there was no guidance like you give on the internet now. Thank goodness for the good work that you're doing. I mean, thank you for this. But I hired an attorney, and I had him write up a document, basically, of resignation. That's because I'd been informed by the stake president that they had heard that I wanted to leave the church, so they were going to hold a bishop's court. So I decided I would get a legal document written up. I sent it straight to Spencer Kimball, and I explained to him that I was leaving. I choose to quit. I've done nothing wrong, and if you ever use the term excommunication in connection with my good name, I'll sue you. So I am just thrilled to be here. I'm so excited with the things I've seen on the internet. The truth that you're putting out there. There's lots of joy, there's lots of love in this room, there's also a lot of pain. But I hope there's no guilt, because guilt is a useless emotion. It does no good. And lots of secular movies and things help me think things through, frankly. And I remember a song that is always, a line in a song that has always given me strength. And it is it's that song, The Greatest Love, which, of course, if you're a Mormon, that's a really bad thing. Love yourself. But the fact of the matter is, God, that these lines have carried me through. I decided long ago never to walk in anyone's shadow. If I fail, or if I succeed, at least I did as I believe. And no matter what they take from me, they cannot take away my dignity. Thanks for being here.
My name is Tara Soma, and I am really, really grateful and somewhat overwhelmed to be in a room with this many other ex-Mormons. I left in 2001, started the process of having my name removed in 2007, finally got it done in 2011, and it's been a really long and kind of crazy journey, and I had no idea that there was this kind of support. If I would have known this in 2001, my life would have been very, very different. So I'm really grateful to be in this room with all of you, and really grateful to Sue and everyone that goes in, all the work that goes into putting this together. And I love reading people's posts on, you know, ex-Mormon sites. It's really entertaining and really affirming. And I actually started searching for this in kind of a different way. I was actually looking for, I was starting to write my story about leaving Mormonism and what that was like. And as I started doing research, I realized that my story had already been told 1,000 times. Every time I read a story, it's the same abuse, it's the same sexism, it's the same when people leave, being ostracized, being told that they're weak, being told that they're wrong for choosing to follow their truth. So I may or may not write my story because it's already been told in a lot of ways. So I'm just really grateful to be able to share and experience what's going on with other people. I was raised in the Mormon colonies, a little tiny Mormon community in northern Mexico, started with polygamy and as part of a missionary effort. And when I grew up, that's all I knew. I didn't really know that there was anything different. So that was life, and it was very simple, and everything was all laid out, and all the paths were there. You just had to follow them. So being the good little girl that I was, I followed them very well and did all the right things, got married in the temple, and not really because I wanted to, not because I was in love, but just because that's what you're supposed to do as a Mormon girl. And the whole happily ever after was really a living hell. So that started my questioning, and that started me wondering, well, if this piece isn't true, what about this other piece? And what about that piece? And then what about that piece? And then I had nothing to stand on. And when I did leave, I got divorced, and I stopped going to church at the same time. My ex-husband did everything he could to destroy me because he couldn't handle the fact that I would leave him. So my own family stopped speaking to me because he was Mormon, so he was obviously right. And so it took several years for them to come back and have community with me a little bit. And then recently I actually disowned them. So it's an interesting process. And I'm very, very hungry for community, and that's part of why I'm here, is I really want to connect with other people and really have that sense of belonging that I haven't had since 2001. I have little bits of that and pieces here and there, but I'm really, really craving that in a big way. And so I recently decided that I'm actually going to move to Portland. So any of you that are from Oregon, if you would come say hi and help me make that transition easier than the last transition was, that would be awesome. And for me, one thing that kind of the gift of my family abandoning me when they did was that I really got to choose life on my own terms. So I really got to pick everything that I wanted to do, and I went wild, wild, wild for a long time, and it was awesome. All those sins were great. I highly recommend them. And I also really had the blessing of being able to find what was spiritually true for me. And by being able to do that, I also had a little bit more compassion. And looking back, it was like, what's spiritually true for me and gives me love and hope, I absolutely want to hold on to. And I would never want to take that from someone else. Even if I think their beliefs are ridiculous, I want to honor what makes people happy and what gives them hope and what gives them sanity. At the same time, being a little bit of a rebel, I want to give them truth too. But it's really, it's been an interesting and fascinating journey, and I'm just really excited to have this step where now I can connect with more people and have more people to share with, and I really look forward to getting to know you over this weekend.
Hello! Okay, my name is Holly, and I'm going to apologize straight up for grading all my papers here, so sorry. I was born in Provo, and my parents moved me to Vegas when I was like 11 months old. It was awesome. So I was raised in Vegas, and it did not connect with the church. It made no sense to me. When I was in primary, it was all great, and everything is, you know, sunflowers and sunshine and daisies and crap. And that was fine. And then when you turn 12 and they put you in young women's and they separate the boys and the girls, that weirded me out. And then they started saying, oh, when you're going to get married and you're going to have all these babies and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I can't stand kids. I don't want any kids. What? You know, I mean, it was awful. I just, like, so I had a bazillion questions. By the time I was 14, I was like, I'm done. And then I went because my dad made me go, but I was definitely mentally not there. So I'm 37 now, and I've been out pretty much officially since I was 16. So yay for me. So I did not go through all the horribleness that a lot of y'all had to go through, and so I love to hear the stories because there's a lot of things that I don't know because I was obviously not in it very long. So currently, one of the things that is very troubling to me is that my niece, who was not raised Mormon her entire life, had to spend her senior year at, for another long story, but anyway, she spent her senior year of high school with her father, who is very Mormon, and made her get baptized, and she felt that she was required to go on a mission, and so she just left like 6 weeks ago to the MTC, and then she just, like within the last week or so, just got to her mission site, which is Mesa, Arizona. So we're actually really happy because we're living in Vegas, and you know, her and her father, you know, of course, they live in Virginia, and so when we found out she was going to Mesa, we're like, yeah, that is so close. So we have, like, want to make plans to go down there and just, like, kidnap her and take her to lunch and stuff, and she, like, had felt the need to write this note or this email to us saying that you are not, the rules are that you cannot come down here whenever you want and just do whatever you want. You have to follow these rules, and I'm like, for reals? So this is our biggest issue right now, is that we have to deal with this. She is the only grandchild, and we're just like, ugh, it's just awful. So that's our issue right now. But so yay, I can't wait to see and talk to everybody. There's so many people here this year. Yay. Woohoo. Okay.
My name is Scott Strohsnyder. I am from Scottsdale, Arizona, and I was prompted to get up here. No. I was officially out of the church in 2009, but I was, for many years before that, I was miserable in the church, and I just didn't know that. So I started dating my wife a few years before that. She is an ex-Catholic, never been exposed to Mormonism in her life. And at the time that we started dating, she moved here to Salt Lake for work. So we're dating, she's living here, she starts asking me all these questions about Mormonism because she's curious. She wants to know what this place is all about. And as she would ask me questions, I would have to drop my head and go, well, yeah, we kind of believe that, yeah. You know, I was embarrassed. You know, speaking the beliefs of Mormonism out loud was really embarrassing. So we continued dating. My parents dragged us to church one day. It was fast testimony meeting, so you can imagine how that went. So we go to church, and I'm not enjoying myself, but I'm thinking, okay, maybe she'll get into this. Maybe she'll drag me back to church. Maybe I can get back into this. So we leave church that day, and I turn to her, and I say, okay, so what'd you think of that? And she said, and I thought this was so profound, she said, that was a whole lot of church and not much religion. You can see why I married her. So anyway, a few years go by. She's reading the Martha Beck book. She gives it to me. She says, you need to read this. Okay, so I'm reading it. It's an interesting story. I get to the part in the middle of it where it talks about the book of Abraham. I was like, holy cow, it's 2007. How come I didn't know this? And that was, you know, the beginning of the end. So fast forward to 2009, I head to the gym one Sunday morning, again, fast testimony, first Sunday. I come back from the gym, my wife's sitting on the couch, she has this look, I come walking in, she goes, we need to talk. I think I said, oh shit. She proceeds to tell me that there was a knock on the door while I was at the gym, she opens up the door, there's a deacon standing there with a fast offering envelope with our name on it, he hands it to my wife. We'd never gone to church in Mesa the whole time we lived there. She looks at it. She hands it back to the kid. Says, we're not Mormon. She slams the door in her face. And so she proceeds to tell me, she says, you need to get your letter in by Valentine's Day or I'm moving out. Well, my response was, no problem. I went downstairs. So at that point, she was actually pregnant with our first child, so, and she told me, she said, we are not having this baby while you are still a member. They are not getting their claws into this baby. No problem. So that was 4 years ago. 4 years ago, we were here at conference with a new baby, and we decided She needed a blessing. She needed an ex-Mormon blessing. She needed to be blessed by the women in our group. So, one of our friends back there wrote, they spent all afternoon out here writing the blessing. And we went upstairs. The women gathered in a circle, right arm to the square, left arm on each other's boob, because that's how you do it. You should have seen it. All the guys were around on the furniture taking pictures, videotaping. It was awesome. But the blessing was fantastic. They blessed my daughter. She got her college education, to marry whoever she wanted to marry, to, what was the other one? All of her tattoos needed to be tasteful. But it was it was one of the most honest blessings I've ever witnessed. They blessed her to be a real person, to be honest, to be authentic. And if you could see my daughter now, she's 4. She's a little bit too honest some days. Anyway, we have a new daughter. She's not here, but if any of you are in the Arizona area, we're going to be doing another blessing sometime soon. All of you women, if you want to sign up, because men aren't allowed in the blessing circle. It was beautiful, and I am so happy that my wife made me so embarrassed to be a Mormon, and I have never been happier, and my daughters are beautiful. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Brian Clark. I guess the first question is, does anyone want to come up and do a blessing? I have like 4 things I want to say all at once, but we'll see if we can do this. It's interesting how much this reminds me of the old testimony meetings. It's kind of the same feeling, and then there's the rib in my side telling me to go up and bear my testimony. So this is pretty familiar. I guess the serious part is, my whole life, the thing that was the most important to me was my marriage, my wife. That was always my focus before I was married, after I was married. We had a challenging marriage, and about 2 years ago, after years of not believing, I finally broke down and told my wife that I don't believe in the Mormon Church and I don't believe in God. And that day, she decided that our marriage was doomed to fail, and it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. And essentially, she chose something pretend instead of something real. I know many of you have had a similar experience, and so there were really kind of 2 years of hell of being in the same house, but really no longer married. And in that time, I was very lonely and went online, and many of you in Facebook, RFM, other places I've gotten to know and become friends with and have become my new family and my new friends. And I wanted to come up here because I wanted to look out at my heroes. You are extraordinary. To find your way out of, not as a pejorative, but as an accurate statement, to find your way out of a cult is extraordinary. And you are my heroes, and I get to be one of my own heroes, I guess, to do that. So back to my wife and I were divorced in July. I have been fairly active in the ex-Mormon community, working on a lot of projects with different of you, and that was kind of the knockout punch. In the end, the church had taken away the thing that I cared about most. And so I needed a break. But I'm ready to get back on the saddle and be working with you again. So I'm excited with those that I have worked with, that I will work with in the future, the opportunity to collaborate with you and to love the Mormon and hate Mormonism.
I'd like to testify of the power of the internet. In October of 2010, I was married in the Salt Lake Temple, just down the street. And in the following January, I was on Reddit, and I came across a comment where they were talking about the line in Star Trek IV about Spock doing too much LDS. And then other people were commenting and making fun of Mormonism, and I was getting a little bothered by it, so I decided to search on Reddit and see if they had a more pro-Mormon subreddit. And the first thing that popped up was ex-Mormon, and I just wanted to see what was in there. And I was reading some exit stories, and I found that I related more to these stories than I related to the people at church, which was a big shock at the time. And I started looking at stuff. I found my way to Mormon Think. Thanks again. I spent the next 3 days just reading constantly, especially the sections on Joseph Smith. It was just mind-blowing. And I had a thought, what if they just made it all up? And it just clicked, like in an instant, and I knew I didn't believe it anymore. And I had this powerful moment of relief that it wasn't true. And all the guilt that had built up over years just kind of washed away right there. It was the big spiritual moment that I never had for the church. So a couple days later, I sat down with my wife and I said, I need to talk to you about something. I haven't told anyone about this yet. You should be the first to know. I don't believe in the church anymore. And she said, oh, thank God. She said, I thought you were going to tell me that you were gay. So thanks, church, for making me bad at sex. For at the time, we were living in my parents' basement, and we were serving in a calling with my parents. And I wasn't going to pretend and just go along with it just to appease them. And so I decided I just needed to sit down with my parents and tell them what was going on. And my mom says, oh no, I've lost another one. And it would have been better if you had died. But that's when I found out that I had two brothers that were already out, and I didn't even know. I thought they were just inactive, or, you know, I don't know. So that was a little rough. I got through it. You know, we just don't talk about that anymore, and we do okay. Just this last year, I sent out an email to my whole family to let them all know that I was an atheist. I wanted to let them know from me why I wasn't going to be there when my nieces and nephews were going through the temple, because I knew that the things that go through their mind, because they were the same things that went through my mind. But by doing that and telling everyone what was going on, I found I had a couple nephews and nieces start up a discussion with me about they're not believing, and you know, it was overall a positive experience. And so, you know, it makes a difference letting people know where you stand. And I say that in the name of cheese and rice ramen.